And now it's time for Power of Prophecy with your host, former professor at the University of Texas at Austin, career United States Air Force officer, and best-selling author, Tex Mars.
Hello, friends. This is Tex Mars. Welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. Today we're going to have, I'll tell you, a power-packed prophetic program. You know, I've always loved the book of Revelation. It's the last book in the Bible of 66, but I'll tell you, there's so much power in it. And it says in the book of Revelation that Jesus Christ is that spirit of prophecy. Can you believe that? He is literally the spirit of prophecy. And of course, his kingdom is a spiritual kingdom, not made out of flesh and blood, but a spiritual kingdom that is everlasting. And so it is imperative that you know prophecy. Of course, prophecy tells us what will happen to mankind in the world. And we find prophecy from Genesis to Revelation. But in Revelation 17 and also 13, there is a tremendous prophecy that I've long pondered and contemplated. Revelation 17 talks about a great beast that will come upon the whole world. And this beast will control nations, languages. It will be spread across the seas and the oceans. Vast global power. But here's the fascinating thing. This beast, as powerful as it is, as deadly as it is, actually has a controller. Someone who is guiding the beast. Isn't that remarkable? And this controller, this guider, this force, like some kind of a parasite, sits astride the beast. She rides the beast and tells the beast where to go, what to do, who to kill. And she, this rider of the beast, this controller of the beast, is so persuasive and so powerful in controlling the great beast that it is she that has the cup of the filthiness and abominations of hell in her hand. And she brings great bloodshed to all the earth and even blood so that many become the martyrs of Jesus. So bloodthirsty and evil is this woman, Mystery Babylon the Great, who rides the beast. Now, I believe very strongly that this beast and the woman who is riding it is revealed in prophecy. We've talked about that before. I'm not going to go into it, but I want you to understand the Bible has this great symbology of a beast. At the same time, Revelation 13 begins with incredible image of a beast rising up. And it says the whole world wondered after that beast. Well, today we have an author in a book. He's written a book about a beast. And you know, I'm convinced it may turn out to be the beast. And there is someone who has control of the power of this beast. And he's going to tell you about that someone. He sent me a copy of his newest book, and I'm talking about a man who I greatly respect. He's a scholar. He is probably the best known writer today writing in this particular field of foreign affairs. And he talks about Jewish power, the power of Israel. He talks in many of his books about the influence of Jews throughout the world and especially over the United States of America. We've offered a number of the books of Michael Collins Piper, my guest today. We've offered, and we still have these books available, and you must have them in your library, dear friends. I do. I refer to them. They are powerful resources. They are all scholarly. And everything in these books is corroborated from what I've seen in other sources. He's written books like The New Jerusalem, Zionist Power in America. He wrote The High Priest of War. You'll want to read that to find out just how we got involved in the Middle East in the first place and why we're over there futilely and fruitlessly dying our young men and women in a no-win war in Iraq and Iran. Then there's Dirty Secrets, another book by Michael Collins Piper about crime, conspiracy, and cover-up in the 20th century. One of the books, one of the first books that I read of Michael Collins Piper is the book Final Judgment, The Missing Link in the JFK Assassination Conspiracy. But today's book has a very strange title. It's entitled The Golem. The Golem. G-O-L-E-M. And I was just talking to the author, and I'm going to introduce him in just a minute, and then I'm going to pretty well turn the show over to him. I've had actually a case of the flu or a virus or something, maybe miniature pneumonia. I don't know what it's been for the last couple of weeks. But I think the fact that I haven't been able to fully work over the last couple of weeks has sort of whetted my appetite for truth even more. That's right. It did, because it gave me some time to think about what Power of Prophecy Ministries is really all about. And you know, really, we're just a ministry of truth. And that's what we seek here. And when I got this book that Michael was so kind to send us here at the ministry, I saw the cover and instantly I knew this book could be the most important book that I would read this year, this decade. It could be the most important book that you've ever read in your life, other than the Holy Bible. And I was telling Michael that everything on the front cover seems to be masterfully, carefully chosen for its meaning. Of course, I've just told you the title of the book, The Golem, but I'm not even going to tell you what the other words and things and on this book are in the picture. I'm going to have Michael Collins Piper explain it to you, and I'm going to really ask him about each one of these sayings on the book. There's one, two, three, four, five statements on the front cover that I'm going to ask him about in this program. Michael Collins Piper, welcome to Power of Prophecy.
Tex, it's always a pleasure to be on your program. I know that you have a lot of good supporters out there, and I've gotten a lot of nice letters from them over the years, people that have read my books and heard me on your show. So it's always a pleasure.
Well, you know, I've read your works for many years. You've been a writer, a columnist and such, actually feature articles for American Freedom Press. Then I began to read some of your books, and I've always been a great follower of presidential politics, and your book on the JFK assassination, Final Judgment, I thought was, talk about a skeleton's key.
Yeah, that's a good way of describing it.
Exactly, in more ways than one.
Yeah.
A great book. And we offer all of these books in the ministry. But The Golem, let me just tell you, Michael, that, in Codex Magica, I don't know if you remembered, it has so many pictures and everything in it, but there's a couple pages there where I have pictures of the golem.
I remember that.
Okay. But of course, I didn't, go into anything like you've got here, and I want to give you credit for your inspiration in this book and your originality. So let me say that right away.
Tex, let me say something here that I had quite forgotten about, but I don't want to overstate it because I don't want to say something that is not true, but it is actually quite possible. My memory fails me as I get a little older here, but it was around the time that I received your book Codex Magica that I had been familiar with the legend of the Golem for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it is quite conceivable, quite possible, Tex, that it was seeing those images of the Golem in your book that put the seed for me in my mind to begin the pursuit of the subject matter that I did follow in my own book, The Golem. We could have come full circle here.
Well, I praise God for that, but let me say right up front that the legend, the tale of the golem has been around a long time. I hope that is true. I hope I did inspire you with just the seed. But I'll tell you something.
I've totally forgotten
about that. One thing about taking the seed and putting it in the soil. There's another story about attending it and bringing it into full blossom as a garden here. And that's what you've done. So let's talk about the golem. First of all, hey, that's a strange title.
And you know, you're an author. You've been involved in writing and publishing for a long time. And you know, there's one thing that publishers will tell an author is that, well, you don't want to give your book a title that's a strange title that people are not familiar with. But I deliberately pursued this unusual title, The Golem, G-O-L-E-M, because as I think your listeners will see, and those who do read the book will certainly understand it after they've read the book, that this title, The Golem, is not only very profound, but it's also very pointed and direct. And what The Golem is, I guess we should just tell people what the not my book, but the legend of The Golem.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Goes back 500 years at least to the Jewish Talmud, and perhaps maybe even further back in the Judaic traditions. A golem, G-O-L-E-M, in the Talmudic tradition, is a creature created out of clay, generally by a rabbi using Jewish mystical chants and things, you know, that are so totally alien. These concepts of what they talk about are so totally alien to Christianity that it certainly raises a question of how anyone could ever use the term Judeo-Christianity. But in any case, in this Talmudic tradition, rabbis can take a piece of clay and turn it into a man. Not quite a man, but a monster. A large, powerful being can be created by a rabbi. And this legend from the Talmud evolved over the centuries, and it's become, the concept of the golem has become a very popular subject in the Jewish world. There have been numerous literary versions of the legend of the golem. There was a very classic silent film, entitled The Golem. And in this popularized legend of the golem, what happened was a rabbi created one of these creatures to protect the Jewish people. He went to the river Vltava in Prague, according to the legend, and took clay from the river and created this large, powerful beast, this large, powerful figure, a Frankenstein's monster, if you will. And this beast was designed to protect the Jewish people from their enemies. But in the legend, as it's been told and retold, this beast, the golem, got out of control and eventually became a danger to the Jewish people themselves.
Now, this golem, you say that the rabbi, the legend is that he created it out of mud, but he used, would we call it black magic, sorcery?
Exactly. That's exactly what it was, and that's what I say. That's why, you know, I've pointed out in my book and to people I've talked to about it that, you know, that the average Christian who believes that that Judaism is so integrally interrelated with the Christian religion would have no concept that these kind of things are practiced in the Jewish teachings. And that's exactly what we have here. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, only God can create living beings. But according to the Jewish tradition in the Talmud, rabbis are able, using magical incantations, they are able to produce a living being that's not quite a man, but not quite not a man, if you know what I mean. So that's what the golem is. The golem is like a Frankenstein's monster.
Ah.
Like in the legend of Frankenstein, that monster got out of control too. Well, see, in the book The Golem, what I'm using this legend to relate to in modern-day terms is the fact that right now there is a living manifestation of the golem here on the face of our planet, and that is Israel's nuclear bomb. The nuclear weapons are created out of clay from the earth. They're created out of uranium, and Israel now is one of the most powerful nuclear nations on the face of the planet. Some say the fifth or sixth nuclear that Israel has the fifth or sixth largest nuclear weapons arsenal on the face of the planet. And this nuclear problem surrounding Israel, I believe, is at the center of much of our problems on the face of the planet today. I mean, if I can backtrack for a moment here, why did we supposedly go to war against Iraq? To prevent Saddam Hussein from building nuclear weapons. Why is it being proposed that we may have to go to war against Iran? Because they say that the Iranians want to produce nuclear weapons. The question, though, that is never asked, the fact that is never told to the people, though, is that the reason why Iraq and Iran and many, many other countries in the Middle East, the reason why they're pursuing nuclear weapons is because they already know that there is one country in the Middle East that has nuclear weapons, and that's a country of Israel. And as a consequence of this, now we've gotten involved in one war that we don't seem to be likely to get out of in any way anytime soon, and we are potentially going to go into a war against Iran that could turn into a global nuclear holocaust. So it's a very, very serious situation, because Israel's golem, Israel's nuclear weapons program, although it's designed ostensibly to protect Israel and its people, the fact is that it's gotten out of control. And it is out of control in the sense that because Israel has this nuclear weapon, and they have threatened to unleash it twice in the past, once in 1967 and once in 1973, because they have this nuclear weapon, they are able to use this as a club over the United States and say, if you don't do what we want in the Middle East, we have this nuclear bomb. The Israeli spokesmen have bragged that Israel's nuclear weapons are pointed at European capitals, including Rome. We've heard different analysts say, very frankly, that, well, you know, Israel has the power; it can do what it wants. I mean, this is the other thing, too, to keep in mind about Israel's nuclear weapons policy. David Ben-Gurion, the founding father of Israel, described Israel's nuclear weapons program as being sacred. I found that extraordinary when I read that text, that the very idea that a human being, if you remember the old Planet of the Apes movies, mm-hmm. They had a series of those movies where in the end there was a secret a group of people living underground, and they worshipped a nuclear bomb.
Mm.
Well, this is what the state of Israel has done. They have made the nuclear weapons program that they have a cornerstone. The very foundation, not just the cornerstone, the entire foundation of their national geopolitical defense strategy. This has been from the very beginning. They were working from the earliest start, and as I documented in my book Final Judgment, Israel was working very secretly and quietly behind the scenes with Red China in nuclear weapons development. Well, this program, as I say, was described by Ben-Gurion, the founding father of Israel, the modern-day founding father of Israel, as being very, very sacred. And I find that a little bit frightening, because when you crank that into the fact that the state of Israel is very much a theocratic state, we always hear Israel as a democratic state, but it's more accurately described as a theocracy, a theocratic state that is founded on Jewish principles, which, of course, come out of the Talmud, which is a document that most Christians, especially modern-day American Christians who are supporters of Israel, most people don't know about this book, the Talmud, this series of religious teachings by Jewish rabbis. And I couldn't even say on the air some of the things that the Jewish Talmud says about Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah, they're so
heinous. To repeat some of the stuff, I would be embarrassed to repeat it, and even putting it in writing is somewhat embarrassing to do.
Oh, yeah, it's pure blasphemy, and to consider that it is in a holy book, so-called, of the Jews, that they use even more than they do the books of the Old Testament is really confounds anyone who believes this is a good religion. But back to the democracy thing, of course, the Jews, being that you're correct, it is a theocratic state, then democracy is only conferred upon those who are of the approved theocratic religion, which is this Talmudic Judaism, and no others are granted the same civil rights, and that's the reason for the exclusion of the Palestinians and the proposal to put them in a ghetto Palestinian state where there'll be a permanent occupant of a ghetto territory. But let's go back to this golem again here. So the golem then in your book is this monster that's been created by the rabbis, this theocratic state, in order to go out and punish the enemies of the Jews, right?
Yes, that's exactly what in effect it is there for. But you know, the scary part about it is, Tex, that Israel has also, this is something that Seymour Hersh, who's a Jewish American writer, he wrote in his book The Samson Option about Israel's nuclear program, that this Samson option is part of Israel's nuclear policy, and that is this, that if Israel believes that it's about to be defeated, that if it believes that the state is about to fail at wartime, that they will explode their nuclear weapons and not only destroy their enemies, but destroy themselves. So we're talking, you know, we hear constantly about Arab suicide bombers. But I'm afraid to tell you, I hate to tell you here, that basically this policy of the Samson option by the state of Israel is basically a policy of national suicide bombing.
So it's like what happened at Masada.
Yes.
They all are at Guyana.
Exactly.
Jim Jones People's Temple. They're saying, push us too far, and we will destroy the whole world and ourselves with it.
And you know, we're
suicide bombers.
The Samson option comes from the old story of Samson, who pulled down the temple, and not only killed himself but killed his enemies. So this is a tradition. This tradition in Israel's geopolitical and strategic thinking, it's something that's very religiously based and religiously oriented. And, you know, that's kind of the funny thing, because, you know, we always hear about Christian fundamentalists and we hear about Islamic fundamentalists, but no one ever seems to want to talk about the fact that there is definitely and a growing level of Jewish fundamentalism, which can rightly be described here as Jewish extremism. And I should mention here, Tex, that's another concern, too, that, you know, we're constantly hearing again, and I like to draw these parallels because I think it makes it easier for people to understand. We constantly hear about, oh, well, what if Pakistan's nuclear weapons fall into the hands of Islamic extremists? Well, that same parallel can be drawn to the state of Israel. What if Israel's nuclear weapons fall into the hands of Jewish extremists? And, you know, it's a very real possibility, because the hardline fundamentalist Jewish elements, the rejectionist elements, the ones that are anti-peace, the ones that don't want to sit down and compromise with the Christians and the Muslims of the Arab world, these are the people who are rising in influence politically within Israel, and also of increasing influence within the military and within the intelligence establishment in Israel. So this is a part about Israel that a lot of Americans don't understand. But even if we, you know, there will be people who will come back and argue, those extremists may never come to power in Israel. Well, okay, that's well and good. There's only one problem there, Tex. As I note in the book, and it's not anything that I've drawn out of thin air, and the material is easily accessible on the Internet, things written by some former American military analysts. Twice now, Israel has pondered the use of nuclear weapons. Now, we have not had nuclear warfare on our planet, at least nothing that we know about, let's put it that way, since 1945. But twice, in 1967 and 1973, the Israelis went on nuclear alert and were, in fact, prepared to use nuclear weapons in the Middle East.
I remember in studying the writings of President Nixon, that's what he and his Secretary of State, Henry Kissinger, were concerned about, that if they didn't send massive American military assistance in the 73 war to help Israel, as Israel was demanding that we do, that Israel would use the nuclear bombs they had and bring bring an Armageddon to pass and kill millions of people. And that's what the Jews evidently were threatening.
Yeah.
You know, help us defeat the Arabs, or we will bring disaster to the whole world.
You know, Tex, I'll tell you, over the years, I used to, I've always considered myself a conventional conservative. I don't like that word for a number of reasons, but I mean, I think all of us who are patriots, you know, we kind of think of ourselves as conservatives. And, you know, in the old days, anytime I would hear someone talking about how bad nuclear weapons were, my immediate reaction was, oh, well, they must be communists, or they must be peaceniks, or they must be pacifists, or this or that. Well, you know what? I'm the biggest and strongest advocate you can find of the United States having a strong military to protect our country from threats within and from without. But I'll tell you what, the more and more I step back and look at the picture of our world today with the possibility of nuclear dangers, I'm beginning to understand what people were talking about when they were saying that we needed to do something about nuclear weapons. And you know, I'll tell you, with the situation as we have it right now in the Middle East, it's not getting any better. It is not getting any better. It is entirely possible that if nuclear weapons are ever unleashed, they will be in the Middle East, and Israel will be central to the problems, however those nuclear weapons are unleashed. So
I'm positive of that, too. You know, I was in the Air Force for 20 years.
That's right.
And I was in a lot of key positions, and there are still many things that I'm unable to talk about because, you know, I was able to see the classified, cables going back and forth to Europe, the Soviet Union, and so forth. And also saw many things that did not jab with what the newspapers were saying at the time. And I would see a lot of things. We set up a Henry Kissinger every time, and when they came to Helsinki and all those areas, our particular unit over in Germany was the one that was tasked to provide all the communications. And of course, we had secret cryptographic machines that would do a lot of that coding and decoding. But I realized even then, I remember when the 73 war you mentioned between Israel and the Arabs, I remember that we began, the whole Air Force was put on alert. Remember, we were not in war, but the whole U.S. Air Force was put on alert, and massive C-5A aircraft began to be flown 24 hours a day into Israel, bringing in every kind of military armament. I mean, howitzers and tanks and armored vehicles. I mean, we brought them an incredible, it was almost in everything we had. And by the way, over the years, Michael, let me say this, many generals and colonels who I work with and for told me how concerned they were that many times America's defenses were denuded so that the newest technology and right off the assembly lines, the newest fighter jets and everything could go to Israel. In other words, we fought with junk often in Vietnam so that Israel could have the best of high technology. We shafted ourselves and killed American troops so that Israel could sit there in the desert threatening the Arabs. And American generals knew about it and cursed it, but were forced to go along.
You know, Tex, it's very interesting because I was just reading today, and
Michael, we're going to have to go for a quick break.
Okay.
Tell me what you were reading today when we return, and a lot more.
I'll do that. Okay, I'm going to take a return. Quick break myself.
All okay. Right. We've got Michael Collins Piper today. We're talking about The Golem. I believe it's one of the most important books you will ever read. We'll be right back after this brief message. The Golem, A World Held Hostage. It's the new book by Michael Collins Piper, and I want to offer it to you today for $25. It's around 200 pages in length. The cover itself tells you what the book is about. The title, The Golem, and there's a picture of the Golem monster, and this is the way the Jews believe the Golem to look. Around his neck, he's got a five-pointed star with a very strange symbol on top of that. On the cover, Michael Collins Piper has this phrase. It says, Israel's nuclear hail bomb and the road to global Armageddon. Is that what Israel's nuclear hail bomb is? Is it a hail bomb? I'm going to ask Michael about that in just a minute. At the bottom, it says this book is a study of the Israelization of American foreign policy and its implications for the survival of mankind. At the top of the book, it says, the case for dismantling our planet's most dangerous arsenal of atomic weapons of mass destruction. Who is it in the Middle East today that refuses to sign the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty? Michael Collins Piper tells you. Who is it today that threatens its neighbors with nuclear weapons? Michael Collins Piper tells you in this book. Who is it today who continues to develop more and more nuclear bombs and refuses to cooperate with the International Atomic Energy Agency? Michael Collins Piper explains it. Is it Libya? Is it Syria? Is it Iran? No. But this book, The Golem, will tell you who is holding the whole world hostage and why they believe that nuclear bombs, as horrible as they are, we've seen what happened in World War II, but it's much more grotesque than that today. And he has told you on this program that one of the leading prime ministers of Israel considered the Golem, the nuclear arsenal of Israel, a sacred, a holy messenger from God. Well, you need this book. You must have this book. I'm convinced, and you know, I don't tell you much, many things like this on this program, but you've got to have this book. I believe it will change your life, and you will understand why Jesus said, blessed are the peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers. So many people are out there angling for war, saying, go bomb Iran. Come on, let's use nukes. Let's kill, kill, kill. I'm amazed. Now, friends, I believe in defending America. I wore Air Force Blue for 20 years. No one could love this country more than me. You know that. I know Michael Collins Piper believes the same way. But we're talking about a blood lust. And that's why you need this book. And there's so much in this book. It talks about why John F. Kennedy was really assassinated. The truth about the JFK assassination. You'll read the words of one of the most wise men in the world, Dr. Mahathir, the former prime minister of Malaysia, who, by the way, has written a foreword to this book. Just incredible words in this book. You'll see some pictures. And by the way, one of the pictures here is of Michael Collins Piper with President Ahmadinejad of Iran. That's right. He met with Ahmadinejad. And you'll have to read it for yourself exactly what happened when he was there in Tehran and why the world's press talked about that particular meeting. But I'll leave that mystery for another time. Israel's nuclear hail bomb and the road to global Armageddon. The book is The Golem. Friends, by the way, there's pictures from the movie, The Golem, way back, I think it was in the 1920s, a classic movie. And he explains all about the Golem and why the whole world is threatened and why the United States is being dragged into this. Against the will, it seems, of the American people. But is Israel riding the beast? Is America the beast? Is Israel Mystery Babylon? And are they causing the beast to go out and kill and slay? The Bible said they would kill and think they do God's service. That's what Jesus said. They will kill you and think they do God's service. And now we have Michael Collins Piper in this book and on this program saying, to them, to the Jews, it is a sacred weapon. Can a hell bomb be sacred and holy? Well, read The Golem. $25. Here's how to get this book. Please order it today. Now, we've ordered hundreds and hundreds of copies, and we're going to get them out to you. I mean, you, the minute we get your order, we're going to turn right around and go to work on getting the book out. And it'll be out in a day or two to you. You know, we don't wait around. We don't play around here. This is an important book. It's got to get out to as many people. I think you're going to read it, and you're going to turn around and buy another 10 or 20 books and pass them out to friends if you can afford it. It's that important. Now, here's how to get your book. Just phone us toll free, 1-800-234-9673. In the United States and Canada, 1-800-234-9673. You can write to us and send us $25. Now, please add $4 shipping and handling, $29. $29 for The Golem, G-O-L-E-M. Now, you can write to us at Power of Prophecy, 1708 Patterson Road, 1708 P-A-T-T-E-R-S-O-N, like the name, Patterson Road. We're in Austin, Texas. 78733 is the zip code, 78733. Of course, this is in the United States of America. By the way, if you're overseas and you're listening to this program on the International Shortwave Radio, you can just pick up the phone and call us. We're at area code 512-263-9780. And, of course, powerofprophecy.com. This book is our feature book. It's right on the home page there. You just go into powerofprophecy.com, and there you'll see a picture of the book. You click onto it, it'll tell you a little bit about the book, have a picture of the cover I've been telling you about that is so striking with its artwork and the words on it. It'll be right there on our webpage, powerofprophecy.com. And by the way, continue to read our powerful website, our internet site. And before long here, I think in another 10 days or so, I have a feature article. Our feature article of the month will be on The Golem. And I was kidding Michael Collins Piper before the show that we even have a picture of Michael Collins Piper there. And you'll see Michael in all his glory. We were sort of joking about that. And but I'm not going to tell you everything we were saying. But we were both saying that wouldn't it be wonderful to be 21 years or so old again and look like we did then. But I think he's still a handsome, striking man. Maybe you will too. And, but in any case, you know, friends, we're going to have a new body anyway. What does it matter? What does it matter if I'm 63 going on 39 today? Eternal Jack Benny. Because we're going to live in heaven forever with our Lord Jesus Christ, and we're going to be given a new body. We don't know what substance it is, but Paul said we will be like him. We're not going to be him. That's what the Jews believe. They believe they are him. They are gods. But no, but we will be of some kind of essence like God. I can't wait for that glorious day. Now let's return to our regular program. My good friend Michael Collins Piper, by the way, he has a radio talk show. I think it's on Genesis Network. Michael, welcome back to the program and tell us about your radio program.
Yeah, actually, it's on Republic. It's,
oh my! I almost messed up. Okay,
all right.
Janice, all right, on Republic.
Good network. No, it's on. It's at republicbroadcasting.org. I broadcast every night from 9 to 10 Eastern time.
Actually, no, that RBN is right here in Austin, Texas. My
that's
good
right.
friend.
Yeah, down in I think Round Rock is where they are.
It sure is. It's a little suburb here, and I've visited there with my good friend. You know that runs that, and he's a very fine gentleman. And I'm glad you're on RBN. Now, let's talk some more about The Golem, okay? Now, you were saying you had just read something. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. Yeah, I'm glad you reminded me of that. Yeah, you were talking about how in your own, and I found that very, very interesting, your own personal first-hand experience with with leaders in our own military, our own American military, how they were so upset that because of the power of the Israeli lobby here in Washington over the administrations and Congress, that our own U.S. defenses were stripped during the Vietnam War, even in favor of providing Israel up-to-date technologies that Israel used in its constant conflicts with its neighbors over there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in that context, I found it particularly interesting because I read in one of the Washington papers today, one of a very, very pro-Israel columnist making the accusation that that the American military is infested with people who are hostile to Israel. That people, particularly in the Central Command, which I understand is the region surrounding the Middle East, that they believe that American military people there are hostile to Israel, and it's for some of these very reasons that you have been talking about. We know, and I pointed out, in fact, I have a whole chapter in The Golem about this topic, Tex, as you know. It's entitled The Revolt of the Military.
Mm-hmm.
The Revolt of the Generals, talking about how the American military leaders have been, you know, they opposed the war in Iraq in the first place. There have been threats that many top military people will resign if the United States tries to go to war against Iran. And, of course, even our own American military, and I have a chapter on this in the book, the people at the Strategic Studies Institute of the U.S. Army War College have actually called upon Israel to release the information about its nuclear weapons, to open up their weapons to nuclear inspection by the international community. Now, see, the average American doesn't know this, Tex. You knew it. You knew about these things because you were right there on the inside. But because of the pro-Israel bias of the big media in America, the mass media, the controlled media, as I call it, Americans don't have any idea that our military leaders, these guys who know what's going on, who know how to defend our country, who want to defend our country, they don't believe that this so-called special relationship between the United States and Israel is really in the best interests of the United States.
No, because they are America First people.
That's right.
Generally, the military officers that I worked with, and I was one, they believed in America First. And I'll tell you something. I was over in Thailand during the Vietnam War years, and I remember in 1967, I'll just give you this small visionette of what happened there. We had a base commander named Robinson Reisner, Colonel Reisner. A very heroic man. He was shot down and became a prisoner of war for 7 years. I knew Robbie Reisner. He was a great inspiration to me as a young airman at the time, by the way, on that air base. And I remember a Colonel Leeser who I worked with then, and Colonel Leeser was complaining. And he said, we would have never lost Reisner. Now, remember, here was a man who was tortured for 7 years.
Yeah.
In the prison camps of North Vietnam. We would have never lost Reisner if we had had the new high-tech countermeasures that were given to Israel off the shelf. You see, he was hit by a missile because we didn't have the newest high-tech electronic ECM countermeasures because they had been given by our traitorous White House to Israel. And our military leaders were begging for the newest high technology. And they said, no, we've got to give it to Israel first, just in case they get attacked by Arabs. Can you believe our own president put America second?
You know, Tex, this is the problem. This is what's always bothered me about U.S. policy towards Israel. And it is simply that there's so much bullying and lies and hypocrisy involved there that you don't find in virtually any other aspect of U.S. policy toward any other part of the world's normal standards. Normal standards of operation just seem to go by the wayside when it comes to dealing with Israel. In terms of our foreign aid, we have a foreign aid program that's set up that Israel's debt on foreign loans from the United States as opposed to direct aid. We always provide them enough direct grants to be able to cover the interest on their loans.
So they never really pay the loan back, huh?
Exactly. I mean, to deal, as they say. I wish I had a credit card like that, you know?
Yeah, you know, people are losing their homes now. Nobody's jumping to first base and saying, hey, here's your interest
payments.
Yeah, you know,
payments. And so just that, you know, and this is the way it has always been. And here, this is, again, there's so many of these aspects of U.S. favoritism toward Israel. I mean, the very idea that we would provide a foreign country, you know, technology that our own men involved in wartime were being denied.
Well, yes, and that we had spent tens of billions of dollars through, Lockheed, McDonnell Douglas, and all the other aerospace industry people to develop the entire military-industrial complex that Ike warned about, by the way, is being turned over. Now, here's something that's bothered me a lot in the last week in the news. Legislation was passed, and evidently Bush has now signed it only this very month, Michael, which says that the United States military is now required to share our most advanced missile technology with Israel.
Okay, well, this is again, you know, it's kind of interesting you bring that up, Tex, because don't forget that even though all these years the United States was providing this very kind of technology to Israel and providing intelligence to Israel behind the scenes, often things we never heard about publicly, at the same time, Israel had a spy, at least one that we know of, but there are, of course, many, many more. They had a spy right here in Washington named Jonathan Pollard, who, incidentally, I met one time many, many years ago, just in passing. But this Israeli spy was stealing millions of American documents and giving it to Israel. Now, today in Israel, they are demanding that he be given, you know, Jonathan Pollard got a life sentence for being a traitor to America, because there's a lot of American military and intelligence people who absolutely said, this guy is a traitor. He has hurt our national defenses. In fact, there's evidence that he was not only giving this material to Israel, but also to Red China, which was a partner with Israel in a lot of arms deals over a 25 to 30 year period. Well, Jonathan Pollard is serving a life sentence in a federal prison here in the United States, but the Israelis want the president to pardon him. They want to bring him over to Israel, where he is celebrated today as a national hero. I mean, you know, this. I guess I'm really not surprised when I hear about President Bush approving such legislation, because, you know, in so many ways, both overt and covert, there has been this extraordinary bias in favor of Israel that has just gone beyond the pale, to the point that it almost sometimes, Tex, when I hear about things like this, it almost seems like it's a satire, that it's, you know, that it's almost a comic. You know, it's like somebody's, you know, if somebody's trying to shit talk, Alan Dershowitz wrote a book called Chutzpah. Well, sometimes it seems like these demands that Israel makes in the United States are just, you just can't believe that they really do it, but they do.
Yeah, it's like the mouse that frightens the elephant and tells the elephant what to do. Now let's go a little bit deeper into this. How many, looking at the Israeli nuclear weapons, and all of this, of course, is covered in your book, The Golem. How many nuclear weapons are we talking about that they now have the capability to deliver and to kill millions of people?
Well, now, you know, that's a very interesting point, because now in the very beginning of the book, I point out that in 1994, Jane's Intelligence Review, which is a pretty highly regarded authority on military affairs, they said that Israel, they confirmed that Israel had 200 nuclear warheads, making it the world's sixth largest nuclear power. Well, you know, I have heard different figures time and time again. I've heard now that they may have as many as 600 nuclear warheads. But, you know, I tell you what I always say in regard to that, we're never really going to know precisely what they have until they open up their nuclear arsenal for inspection.
So they're demanding that Israel, that Iran give up the very idea, which it has already, of making a nuclear bomb, Meanwhile, they've got hundreds, and they refuse to even have inspections by the authorities.
Israel, you know, Israel has never even signed the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Iran signed it. Iraq signed it. Other nations have signed it. But, you know, of course, officially, you know, it's interesting. The government of Israel will neither confirm nor deny, officially or unofficially, that it has nuclear weapons. But as I say in the book, the fact that Israel has this massive arsenal.
Well, you mentioned Janes. Certainly Janes, you know, all the world's aircraft, all the world's navies, is the most authoritative source. Hey, I've got something from the BBC Press here in front of me. If I could read just a little bit of it, ask you to comment. This is my, BBC. It says a Washington-based military think tank, by the way, dated December 2007, has revealed that Israel has produced nuclear weapons with a yield of 1 megaton, and a new report compiled by the Center for Strategic and International Studies claims Israel nuclear warheads have both air and sea capabilities. And it says that megaton nuclear bombs are about twice the size of MK-18, the most powerful made fission bomb. So we're talking about megatonnage here, incredible power that makes Hiroshima and Nagasaki almost like a walk in the park.
Yeah, you know, that I'm glad you brought that up, Tex, because that's the one thing that I wouldn't even make any claims on having any background in the issue of nuclear weapons. But that's one thing that I do know, that I know that a lot of people don't know, and that is the fact, you know, most of us, virtually all of us, when we think of nuclear weapons, we think of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and we know that things were pretty bad over there after they dropped those bombs. Well, the nuclear weapons that we have today are so much more extraordinarily powerful than those things were toys compared to what we have in existence today. So that's the perfect segue into the point that I was about to make. And that is this, that even if Israel only had one nuclear weapon, the results of Israel setting off a nuclear bomb, whether to destroy itself or whether to destroy, well, shall we say, Syria, the ramifications of that would be extraordinary. Now, you know, I had the pleasure of meeting Dr. Helen Caldicott. She's a Jewish lady born in Australia who's become a very outspoken critic of nuclear weapons. And I heard her lecture when I was in Malaysia as a guest of Dr. Mahathir. And Dr. Caldicott pointed out that if the United States, let's leave Israel out of the equation altogether. I'm not going to pick on Israel. I'm going to pick on the United States. Let's just say if the United States used conventional weapons to attack Iran's nuclear facilities, which is what they were talking about doing. And not only were they talking about that, the Bush administration even said a nuclear attack by the United States on Iran's nuclear facilities was not off the table. But in any case, the fallout that would come from just even a conventional attack, nuclear radiation that would come out of an attack on Iran's facilities would spread as far into Southeast Asia as Malaysia. Yeah. It would impact upon Israel. You know, there would be people all over the place, all over the face of our planet, who would be harmed by a U.S. attack on a nuclear facility in Iran. And you see, this is what amazes me about the Israelis and their devotion to nuclear weapons and their efforts to wipe out everybody else's, that they are such gamblers. They are people who deal in such brinkmanship that they would risk this kind of damage even occurring to the people of Israel because they're so determined to prevent Iran from having nuclear weapons.
Well, you know, remember Admiral Fallon, head of the CENTCOM, our admiral in charge of all of our forces in the Atlantic and the Middle East, told, I think it was Time or Newsweek, we are trying, meaning, you know, he was talking about, wasn't he, about Israel about the neocons with the Bush administration and Cheney. He said, we're trying to put the crazies back in the box.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
We don't want them to have a nuclear war. This is a guy talking about his own commander in chief. We're trying to put the crazies back in the box. They're crazies.
Yeah, you know, it's funny, Tex, you bring that up, because I've quoted that very quotation from the admiral to a friend of mine who is a big enthusiastic supporter of the Bush administration. And anytime Bush or any of his neoconservative friends and their hardline Jewish fundamentalist friends start talking about attacking, you know, Syria or Saudi Arabia or Iran or whatever country, he gets kind of dewy-eyed and very enthusiastic about that, because he thinks that that's something good for America. He thinks that these attacks on foreign countries are a way of showing that America puts America's interests first. But as you've so correctly pointed out, our generals and our admirals and the men who actually go out there, and the ladies too, I might add, who go out there and fight the wars wearing the uniform of the United States, these people who do proudly put America first, they are the ones who have been the foremost critics of these very policies that you and I are talking about here today. So I am here to tell you, Tex, I am proud to stand with the military.
There you go.
Against the crazies.
Absolutely, because, you know, the old Civil War general who back in the American Confederate in the Northern War talked about that only, you know, people who have never fought in war would praise it. Because war is hell, I think was his exact word, which goes along with your Israel's nuclear hell bomb. Now, we only have a couple of minutes. This death wish, is that what it is? Is this part of the Kabbalah, the Talmud? Do the Jews believe that they, believing themselves to be God men, that somehow they will either survive this or, you know, even the New Testament talks about the corrupt doctrine of the Jews that they believed in reincarnation, you know, the rabbis, I believe they still believe that in one way or another. Do they believe they'll be able to survive this nuclear hell that they unleash on the world?
Well,
with their
goal? That's interesting, Tex, because in some of my other research over the years, I came across some very interesting Jewish religious teachings, and I wish I had them in front of me here, but basically I can tell you that some of these Talmud-devoted rabbis, these traditional Jewish teachings that are rising in prominence and influence in Israel today, they do indeed say, they have taught, some of their rabbis have taught, that the Jewish people can lose up to, and the figure I may be incorrect here, so don't quote me on it, but I have it somewhere. They say that the Jewish people can lose up to two-thirds of their population, that God says that they can lose that many people and still continue as a people. So in other words, they are willing to risk the lives of, you know, two-thirds of their population if it means the continuation of the state of Israel and the Jewish people. So this whole idea that they will not kill their own or will not sacrifice their own is a mistaken point of view. Now, as I say, that particular figure I'm citing there, I don't remember exactly what the figure was, but it's an extraordinary figure.
That makes sense to me, two-thirds. That would be 0.6666 on the infinity.
Very, very interesting.
And there you go with the occult numerology of the Kabbalah. Well, Michael Collins Piper, I want to thank you for being on the program. We're out of time. We need to come on again soon, talk about The Golem, A World Held Hostage by Michael Collins Piper. Friends, go to powerofprophecy.com, get this book, listen on rbn.com to Michael Collins Piper's own radio program. Michael, thank you so much for being a part of the program today.
Tex, I always appreciate it. You're doing yeoman's work, and God bless you for that.
Thank you. I give credit to God and to our wonderful audience who really care about the truth. Well, friends, this is Tex Mars, and you've been listening to Power of Prophecy. And it's my hope, my prayer, that you'll tune in each week during this same time and discover the power of prophecy.